Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India.
In order to overcome anger, you've got to address two parts. One is the prevention, and then the other is the immediate treatment. So as we all know medically, prevention is the best cure. Prevention is the best medicine. So how do we prevent anger? Well, we prevent anger by recognizing that that which makes me angry is when my desire is not fulfilled. What I want to happen doesn't happen. I become angry. It's very simple. If what I want to happen happens, I'm not angry. If I didn't care whether it happens or not, I'm not angry. I'm only angry when I want something to happen and it doesn't happen. The universe is not dancing according to my tune. So the prevention is, how can I let go of these attachments to how the universe behaves? If I know that this attachment is going to lead me to misery. Because see, the problem is, I have no control over what other people do. I have no control over how other people act. I have no control over the weather. I have no control over earthquakes or tidal waves. Right? So if I plan a birthday party and a picnic, and it rains, I'm angry. But then you say, well, maybe that attachment to a sunny day wasn't so wise to begin with because I don't really have any control over the weather. And if I'm really, really attached to a sunny day, so attached that if it doesn't happen, I'm angry, not just a little disappointed. Well, then I've made a very conscious decision to put my emotional state in the hands of the weather. Like, why would you do that? When we have no control over it, when you can't reason with it, it's not listening to your prayers. It's not like you're saying, oh, clouds, please, just hold back a little longer. They're not listening. So why would you put your mental state in the hands of something that you've got no control over and doesn't listen to you? But whether it's the weather or whether it's someone else, a family member, a friend, an employee, an employer, a colleague, a neighbor, it's really the same situation. We don't have any control over what anyone else does or says. But if I am so attached to how they act, speak, that when they don't do what I want, I'm angry, then I've made that same silly decision. I've said my emotional state is so unimportant that I'm just going to hand it over to someone else's mood. You're in a bad mood? Okay, well, take my happiness with you. Because when you yell, then I'm going to get angry, so my happiness has gone. You're in a bad mood? Take my peace. Because when you insult me, I'm going to be angry. So let me hand you in advance my peace, my joy. Take that along with your bad mood. Why would we do that? If someone is in a bad mood, or someone is full of their own ego, or someone is in ignorance, or in greed, or in lust, or in competition, or whatever they're struggling with, why would you hand them your peace of mind? It makes no sense, right? So the prevention is to say, my peace, my joy, my mental state is in my hands. Whatever other people do, however they act, speak, dress, live, I'm the one with control over my mental state. And I'm going to hold on to that. That's the best prevention. Then you don't even get angry. Then you understand, everybody else is just engaged in their own karmic drama. Sometimes they do things that I like, sometimes they do things I don't like. But either way, I will stay balanced. That's what equanimity is. When we speak about equanimity as a virtue, equanimity says, I'm able to see diversity, variety, and enjoy it all. Like I see an apple tree and an orange tree and a banana tree, and I don't say to the apple tree, why can't you be juicy like the orange? Right? I don't say to the orange tree, why can't you be soft and squishy like the banana? I may have a preference. I may like oranges best. But I'm able to understand that they're all different, and I don't expect them to be like each other. In the same way, I may prefer certain tones of voice. I may prefer certain actions. But I'm not expecting everybody around me to be the same, or to be like I am, or to act like I want. I'm able to see and understand the diversity of people's personalities, of their moods. But the second piece is the treatment. I'm in the midst of anger, the fever is on, what to do? Very first thing, stop. The moment you realize, I have gotten consumed by anger, just stop. You may be mid-sentence. You may be with your hand up like this, about to slap someone. Just stop. The moment you realize. Now, of course, the mind says, "Voto unko lagega ki I am a silly person. There I was yelling and I stopped mid-sentence. At least I have to finish my sentence, uphold my dignity." But the truth is, when you yell at someone, when you insult them, if you slap them with your hand, with your words, nobody respects you. The idea that somehow people are going to respect me when I yell at them, I mean, raise your hand. Has someone ever yelled at you and based on them yelling, based on them getting angry, suddenly you respect them? Never, right? It's always the opposite. Someone yells at you and you think, hey, yard, wow, right? You may not say anything out of politeness, out of fear, out of just a sense of chelo esko katamkardo bolne do. But you certainly don't respect them. So the idea that somehow I have to finish yelling so that I don't lose their respect is actually opposite. Can you imagine that somebody was yelling at you and in the middle of yelling at you, they stopped. And they said, I'm sorry for losing my temper. I need a few minutes alone. I'm going to go take a walk. Would you respect them more or less? Right? Would anybody here respect them less? Of course not, right? You'd think, wow. Kya insight. Right? Beautiful. Really beautiful. So the moment you realize it, just stop. Mid-sentence, mid-word. Just stop. Close your eyes. Some people say count to 10. I find that 10 is not long enough. I can stay angry on for 10 counts. I'd say count to 30, 40, at least. And slowly. And breathe. With each count, take a breath. And what you will find is, you may still be unhappy about what happened. It doesn't mean that suddenly you're going to say, oh, whatever that person did was great. But you're no longer going to have lost yourself. Now you will be able to respond to the moment with clarity, with coherence, in a way that actually means something, in a way that may actually be able to change things for the future. And you won't have lost yourself. So prevention and treatment, both. But prevention as much as you can.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM-FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me.
Yeah, the best way to lead that very pleasant, happy, peaceful life is to let go of the things that steal your peace. So we ask ourselves, what is it that steals my peace? What is it that steals my happiness? So number one, when what I want doesn't happen. And so I say, Cello, I'm going to not be attached to it. It doesn't mean I don't care. It doesn't mean that I don't try for something. It doesn't mean I don't have preferences. But it's the ability to say, Cello, Bhagwan ki chanita. I guess it wasn't in God's plan. I guess for whatever reason, I was not destined to have an outside picnic today. Because it rained. Okay, what else can we do? It's my birthday, we've planned a picnic, but it rained. What else can we do? And what you realize is, as you take away the attachment, things become much easier. Now, when we say we become detached, it doesn't mean disconnected. It doesn't mean we don't work. We do work. Maybe we work even harder because our mind space is free of the attachment. We work, we try, we pray. We certainly have preferences. If I plan a picnic, I certainly prefer a sunny day to a rainy day. But I recognize in all of this that ultimately my peace of mind, my joy, that smile, is much more important to me than having a picnic outside. It's much more important to me than what someone else is going to say or do, or what the results of some action are going to be. Sure, we try. We have goals. But if my peace, my joy is going to be stolen by some outcome I didn't want, that's not worth it for me. And so it's a real constant choice. I call it choose peace, choose love. It's really a very conscious choice. This person is being obnoxious. They're being rude. Not really, just I'm inventing it. Somebody is being obnoxious. Somebody's being rude. I have two choices. Either I can give them my smile also, give them my peace also, or I cannot. And what I know is my smile, well, kimti chizai. It's not something I'm prepared to just give away like that because somebody's mood is off. Somebody's mood is off, okay, it's bad enough already for them. Why should I also give my peace along with it? And so it's a very, very conscious and constant decision in every moment. Something happens and inside you go, ugh, right? Whether somebody says something or something you're trying, it's not working. And inside you just go, ugh. And then there's that in me, that quick click in moment. Ah, choose peace. Choose love. And I've been doing it for so long that it's quite quick. In the beginning, it wasn't so quick. But slowly, slowly, you develop a habit. Whenever that happens in the moment, it's just, ah, okay. And I exhale and everything softens and it's like, cello, okay. So here we are. This is that person's drama of the moment. Okay. I can pray for them. I can send them love from my heart. But I am not going to offer up my happiness or my peace on the altar of their bad mood. It's not worth it. And in the same way with things in the world. Things happen, right? I mean, look at COVID. Everybody's lost something, someone, something. We've all lost something in COVID. And we keep losing things. We lost things long before COVID. We'll lose things long after COVID. But it's a very present example in the moment. Nobody wanted this to happen. This was not on anybody's agenda, wish list for 2020 or wish list for 2021 or now wish list for 2022. But here it is. Just like so many things that were not on our wish list that show up. And the question becomes, okay, now that it's here, what do I do? How can I stay peaceful, joyful, loving in the midst of something that I don't really have any control over? Again, we do our best, we stay safe. But as far as my mind and a global pandemic, I can pray. But I'm not expecting that my particular mind is going to cause this global pandemic to end in the next hour. I would love it. I'd love the magic wand. But if it doesn't happen, I'm not going to lose my sleep or lose my ability to eat dinner. Because then there's no point. Then everything that happens in the world that isn't what I want, I lose my peace. So, excuse me. So, you choose. You choose peace. You choose love. Whatever happens, you've got that power. Pooja Swamiji, my guru, always says, you've got the veto power. Right? That veto of power is yours. You can veto. Veto the anger. Veto the frustration. Veto all of that. Not by repressing it, not by denying it, not by pushing it down, but by simply choosing separately. I don't want it. I'm going to live in peace. I'm going to live in joy. And it doesn't mean there's not sadness. There's sadness. But there's a lot less anger, a lot less frustration. And then you find that you're able to stay peaceful, to keep smiling, to live a life that feels really, as you say, pleasant, joyful. It's up to you. It's not that the universe is going to give you what you want and then life becomes pleasant. You choose that whatever I've got, I'm going to feel pleasant about it. When you have a thought of stress, now the stress comes, agar ye hoga to kya hoga, right? So you plan. The first thing we do is plan, because being peaceful doesn't mean that we don't take care. Stress is normal. If someone gets sick, if we get fired from our job, if we lose our money, if the house burns down, what's going to happen? So obviously we plan. It's not that we live reckless lives. We plan, we do our best. Our absolute best to stay healthy. Diversify our money so if one stock crashes, we don't lose everything, right? I mean, these are things that people do to take care of things. We take, you know, eat well for our health. Here's what we do for money. Keep our job. We're nice to the boss. We do what they tell us, right? I mean, you do the things to prevent what you're afraid of to your best ability. You don't leave diyas burning in a wood house, right? You make sure that you're there in front of it while it burns. If you've got to go out, you extinguish it before you leave. You don't leave candles burning, diyas burning in a house. So we make smart decisions to prevent what we are afraid of from happening. But ultimately we realize it's in the hands of the divine. And so you do your best. Yeah. I know. It would be so nice to be in control, no? I know. It's not easy. It's not easy. There's a lot to be stressed about. I know. But your stress doesn't actually do anything. Your stress does not prevent anyone from dying, prevent the stock market from crashing, doesn't prevent you from losing your job or the house from burning down. It actually just kills you while you're still alive. And it ruins every moment that you do have. So do whatever you can to address the things that you're afraid of. Whatever it is that causes you the most stress, take action to prevent that. What can you do to prevent those things from happening to the best of your ability? And then Baki, We leave it in God's hands. Because the truth is, after we've done our best, there's nothing else we can do anyway. If I had a magic mantra for control, I would give it to you. But I don't. The only mantra that I have is for peace. But not the magic wand for control. Yeah. Choose peace. Just choose it. When that stress arises, just choose the peace. You've got a choice in that moment. Take a lot of deep breaths. Chant a mantra. Pray. Listen to beautiful, beautiful music. Engage in seva. Do service. Help others. Do something that's actively making the world a better place in that moment. It'll change your whole mental framework. And when you're stressed, just notice it. Okay, I'm stressed right now. Okay. Doesn't mean you're a bad person. Doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. Have compassion for yourself also. You're stressed because you care. You're stressed because you want to protect people around you. You don't want bad things to happen to them. So have compassion for yourself also. For the one who's trying so hard to take care of everything. Have compassion for that man. And just notice the stress, okay? Stress is here again. Give yourself a big hug in those moments, really. If someone is around to give you a hug, even better, but if not, just give yourself a really big hug. It's okay. And then do something that'll help someone. Because at least that you've got some control over. Okay? Wonderful. That's all I can ask. And the more you do it, the better at it you'll get. It'll become a habit.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul. Every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
Is it ever right to do the wrong thing? Is it ever wrong to do the right thing? Well, that implies that right and wrong rest within a thing itself. And they don't. And if I say to you, is it right or is it wrong to take a knife and thrust it into somebody's chest, what would you say? Right action or wrong action? There you go. There you go. That's the punchline. Exactly. If he's a doctor and he's operating or she's operating, it's obviously the right thing to do. Normally, under non-medical circumstances, taking a knife and shoving it into someone's chest is considered murder or attempted murder or assault or something very wrong. We just celebrated Gita Jayanti, the day that we celebrate the scripture of the Bhagavad Gita. And there's several places in the Gita, including the whole premise of war itself, violence itself, in which we have this beautiful opportunity to realize, well, yes, on the one hand, we're told violence is wrong, killing is wrong, harming is wrong. And yet, here we have a scripture, not just an acceptable situation, but a model situation, a scriptural situation with God in it. Not just God in the ever-pervasive way that God always is, but actually an embodiment of God in the form of Lord Krishna, in which that which needs to be done is a war. We're told, tell the truth, not just in the actual words, but also in the intention. And yet, there's a beautiful moment in which, through sort of adjusting the truth, that which needed to happen was able to happen. Now, does that mean lying is okay? Of course not. Does it mean harming others is okay? Of course not. But what it does is it makes us realize that right and wrong are context-driven. They're not in a box. Somebody asked a few days ago, last week maybe, whether it was wrong to steal food from someone. If someone didn't have money, someone couldn't buy food, had no way to get food, was it wrong for them to steal food? And yeah, all of our, whether we say the Ten Commandments, whether we say the Yam and Niyam, say, don't steal, asteya. And yet, to me, the stealing by the homeless, hungry, impoverished person is actually much less theft than what society has done to create a person in that situation to begin with. And if in order to have their human right to eat, they have to grab bread off of a cart, okay, I'm not, you know, advocating anarchy here, but if you had to weigh the scales of which is less dharmic, which is a greater sin, for a poor, hungry person to steal a piece of bread off a cart, or for a society to allow itself to function in such a way that there are people who, if they don't steal bread off a cart, have nothing to eat. So, right and wrong is rooted in context. And of course, if it's the right thing to do, it can't be wrong. So it's not, you know, right to do the wrong thing. Well, if it's the right thing in that moment, then it's right to do. It's always right to do the right thing and wrong to do the wrong thing. It's just that that which is right and wrong are context driven. And you know, we see this in in society. We see it very much in Indian society. It was not so much in American society, which is very short-lived, only a few hundred years of a culture, but it's much more pronounced in India, where we've got, for example, societal norms that say such and such is wrong to do. Usually it has to do with how young people grow and how they speak and how they act and what they do and what's considered appropriate. And you go back a generation or maybe two generations, certainly three generations, and you've got social norms that were absolutely wrong. Ask your grandparents if this is wrong or right, they will say, "Ito mahagalate pape." That is wrong. And yet, as societal norms have changed, you know, our grandparents thought for girls to wear pants was really wrong. Unless it was, you know, salwar kameez. There's all kinds of societal norms that keep changing. And so when we look at right and wrong, we have to take them in context. So, whatever it may be, from stabbing a knife into someone's chest to a war, to an untruth, to what you wear, to so many different things. It's all about context. It's all about in that situation, right? I mean, we have laws against going through red lights or speeding. But if you've got somebody in your car who's dying, they've had a heart attack, they need to get to the hospital, and there's no one around, it's the middle of the night, the streets are empty, is it still wrong to go through a stop sign? Right? Is it still wrong to speed? So this is the stuff that philosophical debates are made of. But to me, from a very practical and spiritual level rather than an academic philosophical level, I think right and wrong always varies in context. I think it would be more wrong for a police officer to stop that car and waste half an hour of their time writing up a ticket than for the person to run a stop sign to get somebody to the hospital. So, if it's the right thing to do in that moment, it's right. And even if it may have been right in other moments, if it's not right in that moment, it's wrong. I mean, the truth is right, but if that truth is going to hurt someone and not benefit them in any way, then it's wrong. Bhagwan Krishna said so clearly, right? Tapas of speech is that which must be true, but also kind and beneficial. So if you've got, you know, if you've got a daughter or a son and they're going through puberty and as their hormones change, they gain some weight or they get a bunch of pimples on their face and they say to you, "God, do I look awful?" It is wrong to tell that child, "Oh yeah, you know, you've got a face full of pimples," or, you know, "Yeah, you've gained too much weight." It may be true, but it's neither kind nor beneficial. So even though in theory the truth is right, in that moment, kindness and compassion is so much more right than truth that serves no purpose. They've got a mirror. They know they've gained weight. They know they've got a face full of pimples. They're looking for compassion, for support. They're not looking for evidence. So this is where Pooja Swamiji speaks about our internal GPS that really guides us. And we know in each moment, doesn't feel right. Not the right thing to do here. Or, oh yeah, this really is the right thing to do. And you'll know. So trust that inner guidance, which is not desire, it's not fear, it's not ego, it's not anger, it's not justification or rationalization, but it's the actual inner divine voice, divine intelligence. Some people feel it more as a sign than hear it as a voice. But either way, you know.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin, with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
This moving away from the culture, from the religion, from the Dharma, especially in the West, and also now in metropolitan India. Yes, exactly, yes. We see this in the West, we see it in metropolitan India, the youngsters moving away from Hinduism, moving away from the Dharma. I think one of the core reasons that I've seen, because we work with a lot of youth, I think it's actually a sociologic problem much more than it is a spiritual or religious problem. And here's how I understand it. Up until maybe two generations ago, maximum, maybe three in some places, but very, very recent, Hindu culture was rooted really in young people doing what their parents told them to do. There were no questions. It was not considered polite. You wouldn't, if your parents said do this, you wouldn't say why. Right? You would just do it. So the parents say pranam karo, pranam kiya. Parents say bhagwan ko tilak laga diya. Parikrama karo, parikrama kiya. Right? This is how we do it. We sit, we chant, we pray. We're vegetarians, we act like this, we live like this, these are our social norms. Okay. And it's gone like that for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. What's happened very recently is that the Western educational system has entered India. And of course, in the diaspora, as you speak, the Indian Hindu children are in Western education, in Western schools. And of course, through social media and media, we've got more of that influence. Now, the influence is neither good nor bad. It's not a value judgment. But there's something very different about Western education than Indian education. We are taught and trained to be skeptical and to ask questions. And it's not considered rude. In my classes, if you didn't ask questions, you lost points. The child who sat silently in class and never spoke up was never the top student in the class. And inevitably, the teacher would call on them and say, you know, what do you think about this? And if the child didn't have a great answer, the teacher was angry. If you didn't understand, why didn't you ask? And the flip side of it, interestingly, was the exams were so frequently based not just on right or wrong, but on your thought process. So you had to not only give an answer, but you had to support why you think that is the answer. Now, you have kids raised in school systems like that. They come home and they say to their parents, or the parents say, pranam karo, tilak laga. And they say, why? Now, they're not being rude. They're not intending to be rude. But the parents who never asked their parents any questions think it's rude. And in many cases, the parents don't actually have the answer because they never asked. And so what they say to their children is, because I said so. Right? Now, you could say the mort of because I said so having any power is over. It's no longer a powerful time for because I said so. Nobody's buying it anymore. Youth today, they want answers. Not because they're rude, but because their brains have been educated and trained to ask questions, to be skeptical. Not in a negative way, not in a cynical way, but just not to believe everything they're told. So they come home, they say, why tilak? Or one of my favorites, why are we vegetarian? And the parents say things like, because the cow is holy. Now you take a child grown up in the West who's never seen a cow, right, other than on the side of a milk carton. Cow is holy? Well, I don't think the cow is holy. Okay, so then I'm going to eat meat. Now, the dilemma with that is that A, our children end up making bad decisions or wrong decisions, but B, there actually are reasons for all of these things that have nothing to do with because I said so, because the cow being holy. But there's actually, you know, Hinduism is a very scientific religion. There are scientific bases behind everything we do. But because the older generation never actually asked the questions, they don't have the answers. So they're also a little bit taken aback. They don't want to admit to their kids, ki mujhe kuch pata nahi hai. So instead, they get angry. Are tum kya samajhte apne aap ko? Jo main keh raha hu wahi kar do. And the kids may do it just because they want dinner. But they're not going to believe it It's not going to change them. And the moment they become independent, they're going to say, okay, I don't want anything to do with this. The moving astray of a lot of the youth actually presents to me a really beautiful opportunity. It's a challenge, but it's an opportunity to us to become educated, to learn about our religion, to learn why we do things. And if you don't know, look it up online. I mean, like now you've got a way to find the answers. This is actually why Pooja Swamiji started the whole Encyclopedia of Hinduism project back in the 1980s. Because living in America, Hindu kids would come home from school full of what the teacher had taught them about Hinduism. Their parents would say, that's not true. But the parents didn't actually have any real legitimate, authentic sort of answer to give instead. There certainly was no book the kid could walk in and say, see, it says. And so Pooja Swamiji said, we need to fix this. And that's what actually began the whole 25-year yatra that culminated in this incredible 11-volume encyclopedia of Hinduism. So the answers are there. But we, as the elders, need to not be worried about our own egos. We need to be prepared to say, you know, I don't know the answer to that. But I am sure there's a very good answer for that. It's a very good question. I'm going to find out that answer and I'm going to tell it to you. And number one, that's going to make the children actually respect their parents a lot more, because children have got an amazing kind of BS meter. Like, they just know. They just know. And so when you're actually being honest with them, you get their respect much more than by saying, je me quête en oui, Cardo. And then it gives us the opportunity to actually learn the answers. And what I've seen is that Hindu youth who actually learn about their culture are very beautifully pious, dedicated Hindus. But it's those who are raised where it's more the rituals than the depth. Those are the kids who are going to end up walking away from it. Because if there's nothing in the ritual, and it's just a ritual, this generation is looking for something a lot deeper, a lot more meaningful. They're asking a lot more questions, beautiful questions, about their lives, about their purpose, about meaning. It's beautiful. And it gives us the opportunity to support them and for us to dive deeper and to learn more and to share. And then you'll find they will absolutely be there. I mean, so many people from all over the world are turning to the Vedas. People of every religion turning to the Vedas, to this tradition, for wisdom, for answers. So we have to be prepared to bow our ego a little bit, be, you know, bend the ego, be humble, admit we don't necessarily know, and learn more, and learn together. And give it to them in a way that's deep rather than just rituals.
This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.